You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
with your life. Running like a red disease. Running like a red disease. Ghetto people. Stop giving up yourself. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. there's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything goes well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. Of course, if it was not, but it needed to be done, you got it done. That's right. You did it. Because you don't procrastinate. No, you get it done. And that's why we love you and respect you and revere you and any other good adjective we want to use, because you get it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But, of course, if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. You click on that. At the drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. You click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. This program, once again, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. From 6 to 8 this evening, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8. Followed by, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Cambon and Nataki Cambon. That is followed by, from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. And then on Thursdays, from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with your host, Sister LaWanda Chambers. And then on Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. Once again, on Sunday at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Sunday at 7 p.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brothers and sisters, check out the website AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Everything you need to take a trip of a lifetime, you have right there. Next month, April 2nd through the 12th, Brother Bomani is going to Senegal and Gambia. Then in May, May 24th to June 5th, he's going to Ghana. And then in November, November 18th through the 29th, going to Tanzania. And then December 24th to January 5th, 2022, going to Ghana again.
And all of these are $3,700 per person. You can put your deposit down, and then you can be paying on it. So by the time it comes up, you're ready to go. You're ready to go. Africa for the Africans. Brothers and sisters, if you want to see photos of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Baba Rinoco, he has his part three of the Nile Valley series, A Journey to Nubia, Nubian Kush. And that is going to be Friday, March 26th, and Saturday, March 27th. That's not this weekend, but the following weekend. Not this weekend, but the following weekend, March 26th and 27th, A Journey to Nubia. And as you know, Baba Rinoco has always have some outstanding photos. Many of them he took himself. He's a primary researcher. So this webinar is going to be happening the 26th. So both sessions is $25 for both sessions for Friday and Saturday. Okay. On Friday, it's in the evening. It's from 8 p.m. to 9:30. And then on Saturday, it's 11 a.m. to 12:30. All these are Eastern times. So check it out. Go to Dr. Rinoco, drrinoco.com, drrinoco.com. Habashah Incorporated, Habashah. I tell you, they are doing the work and they deserve to be supported. The work that they do here locally, you know, with Habashah Works and all the other things that they do. I mean, it's just a beautiful concept. Habashah Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, Urban Green Jobs. All of these things are part of what Habashah does. And, of course, the Kashi Project in Ghana, the Kashi Project in Ghana. So check out HabashahIncorporated.org, HabashahIncorporated.org. Well, Dadas, no, let me go here. I'm going to start doing this. Instead of going to Wadadas after Habashah, I'm going to go to Bibi Atumi. Brothers and sisters, go to Bibi Atumi. Go to BibiAtumi.com. ABIBITUMI.com. BibiAtumi.com. It is where you need to be for your information, for all kinds of events, crowdfunding, news feed, Bibi Atumi, classrooms. That's right. They have classroom work. You can learn Kiswahili, Akan, Yoruba, Wolof. That's right. African warrior tradition classrooms. So go to brothers and sisters, go to BibiAtumi.com. Wadadas. Wadadas Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right on Ralph David Abernathy, across from Soul Veg, down the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which, of course, is open on weekends. The Shrine is open on Friday and Saturday from 1 to 7. So whatever books or any other things that Shrine has to offer, you can get at the Shrine of the Black Madonna on Friday and Saturday from 1 to 7. But Wadadas, Healthy Market and Juice Bar, check them out. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia, has moved. He has a great location right down at the main thoroughfare, right? Still around the corner from where she was by the food court. So give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which has the finest selections of books, postcards, greeting cards, figurines, t-shirts, sweatshirts, you name it, they have it for you. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Baba Ajamu, Kazimde Ajamu, with the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. I mean, just a beautiful job that Coffee and Household has all kinds of positive events at the Black Dot on the weekend. So check out the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People. They had their conference this past weekend. Wednesday's guest will be Bubba Akima to talk about what Us Lifting Us, what went on with the conference, what their direction is. Of course, Us Lifting Us, as I consider in this movement for African liberation and self-determination and sovereignty, is the economic arm of that program, because that's the kind of concept that we need. That's the kind of concept that we need. A concept of collective, cooperative, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us. So next Wednesday's program, Baba Kimo will be my guest from Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Scents, your number one shop, natural shop, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Greensboro Road, Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall in Booth 225. For more information, contact Sister Shelley at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense. Your number one natural shop. That's right. Sister Gabby with Sanjay-Aidi. Go online to sanjay-aidi.org and see the great work that Sister Gabrielle Arreal has been doing in the island of Haiti. Go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, Sanjay, dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay-Haiti.org. Akabin Institute, brothers and sisters, Baba Baruti and Mama Yah have been doing an outstanding job of educating our young warriors, and they need our support. So send your check and money order to Akabin Institute. Make your check and money order out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But, of course, you can use PayPal and Cash App. If you use Cash App, put in a dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make it an ongoing contribution to the fine, great work that they are doing. If you want to get any of the books by Baba Baruti, go to AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com. All right, family. The Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sasim. Let me get myself together here. Okay. March 14th. No one seeing life has one dark, vast cavern of uncertainty, would or could be moved or impelled to learn. Nathan Wright, Jr. To the African mind, European culture and society are nothing but one dark, vast cavern of uncertainty. There is no security there, intellectually or otherwise, because we do not define or control this reality and therefore have no power here. We may have noise, but we have no power. And there is no reason for us to want power here, because everything in this space goes against African sanity. Why would anyone want to work to acquire a mastery of thinking which makes no beneficial sense? Why would anyone want to work to learn and master the tools and the tricks of a reality that systematically works against you being who you are naturally are? Where success is measured by how far away from your very soul you can run, and where everything you learn turns you into an even more efficient captive or slave of your own people's enemy. In this despiritualized abyss, there is no life. There are only dead things worshipped in ways which dehumanize every form of self-love possible. Why would one want to learn for nothing? There can be no learning in such a place because true, functional learning requires a will driven from inside. And the only thing cultivated inside hardened zombies is a lust for those things that their owners discard or use to distract them from their ignorance and their oppression. Affirm, I am moved and impelled to learn. Affirm, I am moved and impelled to learn. March 15th. African people responsible for the educating of African youth yet exist in cultural allegiance with people other than their own African ancestors and elders should be highly suspect in their abilities or desires to fulfill the collective mission of a school that identifies as African-centered. Let me read that again. African people responsible for the education of African youth yet exist in cultural allegiances with the people other than their own African ancestors and elders should be highly suspect in their abilities or desires to fulfill the collective mission of a school that identifies as African-centered. Ayeye. Heteru. A truly African centered educator systematically roots out any Eurocentric thought from our children's reasoning, no matter the subject. They are consciously political in every reason, in every sense of the word. They clearly understand that the classroom is an intricate part of the front line and use everything at their disposal to guide our warriors in training down the path of an African righteousness. Educators do not leave the development of the conscience of our children to chance. Their mission is grounded in preparedness and weaponizing our children to be the best warriors they possibly can against our enemies. Therefore, the teaching of uncompromised, untainted traditional African culture and values lies at the center of their work with the students. Their unspoken goal is to educate the children in the African way to such a degree that if they were left alone on this planet to rebuild society, the civilization they created would be African from its ideological infrastructure to its architectural superstructure. Overall, those who educate our children must readily take on the responsibilities of leading our youth into an understanding of their core power as warriors and role as servants of our people. Along with this comes the responsibility in intentionally, politically, selfishly, and unwaveringly using the totality of their genius and power to serve the interests of a sovereign African future. Bibi Fahodie, Ashe. Affirm, I am an African-centered education. Affirm, I am an African-centered educator. And that's what we need. That's what we need, African-centered educators. African-centered brothers and sisters to help us out of this madness. And believe me, this is madness. I remember Last Poet's piece, This is Madness. Yes, sir, it is. This is madness. You know, I push the Pan-African Federalist Movement because this is what this program is about. This program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and African sovereignty. This program's motto is Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die. Straightforward, straight, no chaser. And we need to understand what we're up against. Like I said, my guest on Wednesday will be Baba Akimu to find out more about what's happening with us lifting us, the economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or, as we like to say with Us Lifting Us, family-centered economics, which I consider the economic arm of Pan-Africanism. That concept, that collective concept, not where a small group gets all the resources, all the damn money, and meet out a little at a time for the mass. No. It's where we as a collective control the resources and the money and make sure that nobody is impoverished, that nobody is unclothed or unfed or unhoused. That is our way. And then on Friday, Brother Mickey Dean with one of the solid organizations in the National Black United, in the National Black United Front, along with Houston at its headquarters, is Kansas City, which is a very strong organization. So Brother Mickey Dean from Kansas City also was the international chair. We're going to talk about, you know, the scramble for Africa, the new scramble for Africa. There have been a number of them, but this is the latest in what we must do. We're talking today about Pan-Africanism, as we always do. But African radicals must realize the importance of Pan-Africanism. This is an Al Jazeera column. The success of individual struggles in Africa depends on achieving continent-wide solidarity. You know, in the Pan-African movement, and what the Pan-African Federalist movement is about, is trying to get the countries on the continent, particularly, and us in the diaspora, definitely, to unite with Africa. One African United States, or African states. And that's what's important, is that if Africa were to unite and kick out all the, I mean, first we got to kick out the despots. We got to kick out the neocolonialists. We got to kick out all those individuals who have ruled and who have gotten rich, who've allowed the European to get rich, or the Chinese, or any other group to get rich. We got to kick them out. We got to kick out the so-called Arabs in the north, in Egypt, in Libya, and in Algeria, and Mauritania, and so forth. The continent of Africa is ours. It is one place that there is no discussion, there is no debate, there is no argument. Okay, people say, well, the whole world is ours. You can't make that claim with other people in the world. But one place we can make that claim and solidify that claim is on the continent of Africa, the origin of our humanity, the origin of our beginning, documented, proven. It is ours. And anybody who has come as of yesterday must go. Anybody who's even been here for hundreds of years, you still must go. You are not African. You're still German. You're still British. You're still French. You're still whatever. The Indians, the Koreans, the Chinese. And once we get it together, once we are starting to develop the infrastructures that we need, the housing, the health care, the education, all the things that we need, Africa will open back up. And you, as a country, you want to deal with us, you will deal with us fairly. You will pay fair market value prices. I just saw a piece, you know, I mentioned this before, about when I was in Africa, sitting in one of the cocoa farms. I hate to use the word plantations. Sitting in one of the cocoa farms, you know, thinking here's the raw material. And now come to find out they had been using child labor. Does not surprise me. Because what these corporations do, they want to pay as little as they can for the foundation of their product. If it were not for that, they wouldn't have a damn product. They want to pay little or nothing. And then, of course, they go through the process. And then once it's done, it costs them lots of money for the various products. And, of course, we got basically nothing, particularly because of child labor, no unions. You know, we need leadership in these countries. We need leadership in these countries that see the vision of Pan-Africanism, not the fear that they may be out. If you're a good leader, you move in that direction. To me, any good leader on the African continent as of today, she sees that vision. He or she sees that vision and will be willing to work towards making that vision a reality. And to me, even if it means consolidating other countries where you might be out, but damn it, it ain't about you. It is about us as an African people having a place that everywhere we are on the or everywhere we are on this planet, we know we have a home. You will feel better about who you are, better about yourself, better about your situation. Maybe you can't leave Europe. Maybe you can't leave the U.S. or wherever you might be. But now you know when you're ready to, when you can go home. You can go home. And what you're going home to is a place where people are cooperative. It's a place where people work together. It's a place where people are getting things done. There's infrastructure. There's roads. There's highways. There's water systems. There's energy systems. There's various types of homes built for the benefit of the people. There's education on an elementary level, as well as a secondary level, and well as an advanced level. Everything we need, we have. The main thing that we need at this time is the right mind. Because without this right mind, there's nothing. There is nothing, brothers and sisters, that we can do without the right mind. But with the right mind, there is everything we can do. There's everything that we can do. And we can do it independently. We don't need nobody's help. We already have it. We already have it. This is an article written by, and it's relatively new. It's last month. And the article writer is Brian Knight. He is a London-based journalist and oral historian. And he hosts a podcast, Tell a Friend. Demonstrators holding up banners and shouting slogans during a protest against police brutality in Lagos, Nigeria last October. Remember that. I remember that. There's all kinds of protests all around, particularly towards the authorities. We live in a world where, you know, the rich, some of them employ local police or give them contributions to, but some of them have their own security forces that are highly trained, that are like mercenaries, that are, they mean, just assassins and killers to maintain the situation that they created for themselves. 2020 was a significant year for Africans in many respects. It was not only the year when social norms were drastically altered, but it also marked the resurgence of African radicalism. The COVID-19 pandemic both amplified and the extreme corruption that had long taken place on the continent and forced marginalized communities to mobilize against such injustices at a moment of great need. In order for African young radicals to maintain momentum in this new year, they must strategically organize themselves and move from localized rebellion toward a continental Pan-African resistance. That's what they must do. This situation is continent-wide. That's why, please, brothers and sisters, dismiss any talk at this moment of reparations, because reparations can be one of the most divisive discussion that there can be, especially with an organization like ADOS and others, because yes, we should and must get reparations, because not to do so does a dishonor and disservice to our ancestors who suffered, who died, who were humiliated. So yes, reparations, but first we must get our act together, because I don't want no damn $20,000-$30,000. I'm serious. And that's it. So they can buy us off and they continue to do what they do. No, I want us to be together, and we make the move for reparations to build institutions, to repair ourselves. First, we internally repair ourselves. The internal reparations or the internal repair is the right mind. We purge ourselves of ignorance and stupidity and self-doubt and all the things that continue to hold us back. We purge ourselves of that. We infuse ourselves with knowledge of who we are and a confidence in who we are. And one of the things that we must do is learn to trust one another, build with one another, grow with one another, respect one another. Trust is huge. And so then at that particular moment, now we're ready to advance ourselves. Yes, as I stated earlier, there are some of us who feel we have to still live here in the U.S. or anywhere else that we are in the diaspora. But for those, and particularly for those who have some skills, who have some knowledge, who have some training, who have the right mind, who know that they're going to go to the continent not to be rich. I know that just recently, and I saw some video of it, I think it's in Nigeria. One area, the area was so rich in gold that people were just digging and just, taking the pan, that sifts the water, separates, and then bam. It's gold. And that's cool. But the richness of Africa should not just be about its mineral wealth, but its people. Its people. And I'm not asking that whatever cultural group that you are from, that you have to dismiss that. What I am saying is that what's most important is not that. What's most important is to come to realization that we are one Africa. Still practice your customs, your tradition. Still feel good about who you are, your history, and so forth. But what's paramount, what's most important, is that we are one. We are one African people. Federated one African states, the African United States, or the United African States, the United African States, the United African States. That's who we are. That's who we must be. In order for Africa's young radicals to maintain momentum in this new year, they must strategically organize themselves and move from localized rebellion toward a continental Pan-African resistance. The grievances expressed over the past year have been long held, and acts of injustice and question predate the pandemic. However, COVID-19 created the perfect conditions for Africans downtrodden to reach breaking point as people saw governments displayed even greater disregard for their citizens despite the dire health and social conditions the world found itself in. From Nairobi to Lagos to Johannesburg, young people took to the streets to protest police brutality and the ambiguous corruption plaguing their governments. While police brutality had predated the health crises, such abuses had escalated during the pandemic as social distancing measures and curfews emboldened violent police forces and gave them a convenient excuse for their cruelty. This was an issue quickly identified by the United Nations High Commissioner Michelle Bracket, who spoke of the human rights disaster awaiting countries where emergency measures were being weaponized against their citizens. In June, hundreds of demonstrators took to Mahara, an informal settlement in Nairobi, to protest police brutality in the country. Records by the Independent Policing Oversight Authority show that in the first 3 months of the nationwide curfew imposed due to the pandemic, 15 deaths and 31 injuries were directly caused by police brutality. South Africa also took to the streets in June to protest against police brutality, which had disproportionately victimized African people during the national lockdown. Standing outside the country's constitutional court, protesters remembered the life of township resident Collins Kosha, who was killed by South African soldiers enforcing a COVID-19 lockdown, while also extending sympathies for George Floyd, an American African killed by U.S. police. In October, thousands marched in Lagos and other Nigerian cities to protest violence by the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, SARS, against young people. The mobilizing success of the movement lay primarily in the activist use of social media to organize street protests, both in Nigeria and internationally. The year ended with popular protest and brutal repressions in Uganda ahead of the hotly contested January election. Following the arrest and alleged harassment of opposition presidential candidate, better known as Bobi Wine, Robert Yingluyeli, I have an African name. It took me months for me to learn to pronounce it, okay? Better known as Bobi Wine, violent protests erupted in November and resulted in 54 deaths. The situation did not improve in the runner-up to the election, as there were further accusations of security forces killing opposition supporters and attacking journalists. Despite the mass support garnered by the end of SARS, that's in Nigeria, protests and continent-wide interests, Bobi Wine's defiance has attracted a unified political movement across sub-Saharan Africa has failed to materialize. One of the reasons behind this absence of Pan-African solidarity is that African radicals are focusing all their energy on building local sites of resistance while failing to unite the experiences of marginalized communities regionally and continentally. And I understand that you want to make sure that locally you're together. Yeah. But what's more important is that you consistently emphasize the need to be continent-wide. You constantly put the need to be continent. Yes, you deal with right where you are. But the important thing is that is the link that you create to other organizations continent-wide. But in order for African radicals to sustain the momentum behind their movements and truly tackle corruption and institutionalized brutality, a Pan-African approach must be adapted. This approach to resistance would involve the creation of a strong network and alliances between radical movements with similar values and visions for the continent. These networks would not only give strength to the movements facing extreme government suppression, but also enable Africans' radical activists to tackle academic class inequality and the omnipresent plague of corruption. That's why the Pan-African Federalist Movement must be promoted, and us as Africans, wherever we are, who understand this, must be members, must support it, must push and promote it. It is the only way. It is the only solution. Outside of divine intervention, now, if you want to believe in divine intervention, because you're a Christian, or you're a Muslim, or whatever theology you have, and you waiting on that, so be it. Don't need you. I'm talking about the Africans who understand that no longer should we beg anybody to allow us to be who we are. No longer. Saying, can I do this? Is this okay? No. We have a continent that is ours. And all the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. That's a Dr. John Henry Clark quote. And that's a fact. And that's a fact. They have been ripping Africa off. They have been ripping Africa off for hundreds of years. And yet, still, just as I stated, they found all that gold. I think it was in Nigeria. I mean, there was a ton of people there. They digging. I mean, whatever they can dig with, they trying to find. I mean, I understand the poverty and the idea of what the Europeans have brought. This individualistic idea. And that they, you know, their opportunity to get up out of poverty into a better class. I understand these things. But what's most important is not what happens to an individual. What's most important is for us to be collective. Individualism is a European Caucasian desire. They've always promoted the individual. That has never been the African way. But collectivism is an African must, an imperative. We must be collective. We must work with one another. So, this approach to resistance would involve the creation of a strong network of alliances between radical movements with similar values and visions for the continent. These networks would not only give strength to the movements facing extreme government suppression, but would also enable Africans, radicals, African brothers and sisters, activists, to tackle epidemic class inequality and omnipresent plague of corruption. One must realize that many African governments guilty of exploiting citizens and appropriating funds are aligned through covert informal pacts which enable them to continue their corrupt practices. While the scale of embezzlement and institutional brutality varies between African governments, leaders on the continent are hesitant to call out their neighbors for abuses of power, as they themselves hold similar records at home. Instead, most of the African leaders and continental organizations such as the African Union opt to turn a blind eye to such abuses, as thus become complicit in them. We must, brothers and sisters, call out everything for what it is and what's happening. We must have the courage. We must have the courage to call it for what it is. Adopting a Pan-African approach would enable African radicals to not only tackle systematic corruption and violence within their country, but also to confront the continental networks of power which prevent real change from being enacted. Mobilizing like-minded radicals across the continent would also form effective support bases for local marginalized groups which may lack the resources to effectively challenge powerful centers. When an organization knows they have a national or continent-wide base, they become more effective immediately because they're not alone. We all speak with that one voice for independence. We all speak with that one voice for self-determination. We all speak with that one voice for liberation. We all speak with that one voice for sovereignty. We all speak with that one voice. And it's spoken in South Africa, like it is spoken in Ghana, like it is spoken in Nigeria, like it is spoken in Kenya, and any place else on the continent. This is what we are striving to do. This is what we must do. And this is what we must do now. Those currently in power have already realized the benefits of continent-wide cooperation. They have set up numerous regional unification initiatives in the West and the East Africa and ratified the African Continental Free Trade Area. Although these are capitalist ventures that come with their neoliberal flaws, they still demonstrate that Pan-African unity is in the best interest of African people. And I know that, I was watching a piece on capitalism and of course, unbridled capitalism, they were against. They were against in the other form, but they were not against capitalism itself, because these are Caucasians. You know, they're against capitalism that hoards things, capitalism for the few, you know, for the 1%, members of the 10%, they're against that. Because their belief that capitalism, when it is structured differently, everybody can participate. Well, in order for capitalism to be what it is, there are stratifications. In order for those top people to have, a whole bunch of people can't have nothing. And that's what capitalism is. Capitalism is not a system where of fairness, of making sure that resources are disseminated amongst those who have and those who have not. Marginalizing across nations offers great opportunities for those seeking to challenge oppressive regimes and institutions. In order to change the status quo, radical activists should recognize the utility of adopting this continental-wide approach. The importance of education and inclusiveness. When forming a Pan-African movement for change, it is also important for grassroots campaigners to reflect on the continent's rich history of radicalism in order to learn from the successes and failures of the previous mobilizers. The often complex histories of African radicals such as Samora Machel, Winnie Mandela, and Thomas Sankara can offer both inspiration and caution for those seeking radical change. Historical education is of great importance, and therefore such knowledge should not only be held by a small group of academics within their movements. It is important for radical movements to raise the political consciousness of their members and ensure that those in rural areas or lacking access to resources are included in this endeavor. I say, everywhere, this is something that must be done. Because if it is not done, our future, already uncertain, already in a tough situation, but if we do not do what is necessary for us to do, we won't have a future. We won't have a future. The decision by the NSARS, which is, of course, that security group in Nigeria. The decision by the activists to identify any individuals as leaders were truly inspiring and emphasized the importance of a strategic organization. The Nigerian activists were aware of that of having appointed. The Nigerian activists were aware that having appointed leaders made the movement prone to manipulation by the government, so they were eager to avoid this. Furthermore, having prescribed leaders is disastrous for radical movements, as if they will risk causing divides between the vanguard leaders and the resistant masses. That's why it is, you know, we don't need a charismatic leader. We need a charismatic program. We need a cadre of leadership. So if we do appoint a spokesperson, that person, he or she, is known, and then let it be known that they are just a spokesperson for this group. Because if you bump them off, we turn the page with another person and we continue on. Nothing will stop. Just as Fred Hampton said, you can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution. As well as avoiding organizational hierarchies, radical movements on the continent should also seek to further include those who bear the brunt of state brutality and social oppression. For example, the contributions of radical women in historical anti-colonial and women's liberation struggles is often overlooked and downplayed, despite women such as Abibi Atiya Muhammad, and there's a few other sisters here, having played vital roles in the movements of change. African women are targeted by governing institutions in unique and often overlapping ways, and therefore their voices must be amplified when pushing for change. As you are a civil rights leader, Martin Luther King famously stated, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." The fight against institutional brutality cannot be fought without an intersectional assessment of state violence that recognizes the nuances of various community experiences. Once these Pan-African movements crystallize, mobilizers will be faced with the task of delicately balancing the focus of their campaigns. For example, it is important to tackle localized and immediate issues such as police brutality. It is to address structural challenges like neocolonialism and capitalism. A balance between these micro and macro approaches will ensure that the concerns of the everyday person are not lost in vague academic discourse. Africa's working class have long been victim to exploitation by foreign powers and corrupt leaders. In these unprecedented times, marginalized communities must realize the immense power they have to challenge injustice and transform their own lives. Radical change not only requires discipline and strategy, but it also calls for Pan-African unity of Africans' disaffected masses. Ashe. Once again, that's Brother Brian Knight, and that was written for, he's out of London, London-based journalist and oral historian, and he has a podcast called Tell a Friend, discussing current affairs and historical topics. And this article is written through Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera. Yeah, we're going to take a break. We come back from the break during the conversation. We can talk about that or anything else you feel that is important, anything that happened this weekend that you want to bring to the attention of our people. So, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com. and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
There is a lot of talk of late on the African continent about the fact that Africans are awakening. There is a lot of talk about the fact that we are woke. But the question that I'd like to ask you is, almost 100 years ago, a man called Marcus Garvey rose and told Africans that they must unite. Unite in their control of resources. Unite as nations. Unite their imaginations, their dreams, aspirations, and capabilities to grow in Africa. And a race that will be able to self-determine and compete against other races. A man called Kwame Nkrumah came and said the same message. And another by the name of Malcolm X said the same. But the question is, after almost a century since the rise of Marcus Garvey, has Africa achieved unity? Do we control our resources? Do we unite in our aspirations, dreams? And have we elevated Africa into a continent and a race that can compete and self-determine against other races? The truth of the matter is we have failed. We have failed because we have remained divided. We've continued to work as 54 different states that continue to be subjugated. This is why the French continue to have 14 colonies on the African continent. It is why 36 African countries have got American bases and AFRICOM on their soil. It is why many African countries continue to sell their resources, their institutions, for debt to countries like China. And the question that I'm now challenging you, the woke generation, with is, what are we going to do about it? The reason we've got wars on the African continent is because we're being divided for conquest. The reason we've got sanctions on the African continent is that all the independent knowledge and education, the power to take control of our resources, can be destroyed so that Africa can continue to be colonized by our Western colonizers. This is why now we need to rise. Remember that you, the African American, with all your paper money, the greatest wealth among all black nations, only have paper money, but the true wealth is in Africa. The true wealth is the reason why Africa is under sanctions and war, the one that Europeans want to keep for themselves. You need to bring your paper money, your skill, your knowledge, your frustration back to Africa to invest it in the control of real wealth and real resources in the form of the oil, the diamonds, chrome, lithium, cassiterite, and all the other resources that the Western worlds are fighting to control in Africa. Your paper money can be leveraged into machines, skills, technology, and the knowledge that Africa needs in order to move and prosper. You, the Caribbean, with your skill, power, determination, you, the Jamaican, the first people to resist European colonialism. You, the Haitian, the very first black peoples to defeat a European army. You are the answer to Africa's problems. You, the European African, with all that you've learned and earned, the basketball player, the soccer player, the sportsman, the singer, the musician, the actor, with all your billions of dollars, are the investment that Africa needs to stop its dependency on the colonizer. It's about time that we rose. And I'm saying that Marcus Garvey's dream can be fulfilled. Because when he dreamt it, not a single country, not a single African country was independent. When he dreamt it, not many black billionaires existed, if any. But today we've got black billionaires. Today the richest man in Africa is a black man. We have what it takes and the capacity that it takes to grow our continent into being a continent that can be respected, can self-determine, control its resources, control the processing of those resources, and create currencies based on those resources to be the leading economy in the world. With that, we can industrialize, grow up the technology curve, and begin to create the machinery, the tools to defend the sovereignty of this continent. And now I say it's time that we unite. We have countries like Zimbabwe under U.S. war sanctions to make it unattractive for any African to come because Europeans are preserving it for themselves. But I'm inviting you, my African-American brother, you Africans in the diaspora, you Africans on the continent to say, come and take advantage of the greatest reserves of lithium, chrome, gold, true wealth, land, an opportunity to develop infrastructure for us to create wealth as a people, for yourselves, for the advancement of Africa. The time to awake is now, but awakening takes action, pride, investment, development, innovation to give our people power. This is the time.
The time is right now, this very moment. That's what time it is. What time is it? Remember back in the day in the 60s? Nation time. That's right. I even had a business called Nation Time. Nation Time product. It's Nation Time. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1. Well, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, of course. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. this program. But tonight, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jahal Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawil Kamban and the Taki Kamban. And then that's followed from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisi Y. Ayan. And if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, oh, that's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. Saturday from 4 p.m. to 6, on Saturday from 4 p.m. to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And on Sunday, once again, at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We have a number of people in the queue. So, of course, if you hit star twice, you can join this conversation. But if you just want to listen, that's cool, too, as you know. But hit star twice, or please dial at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. As I said, my guest on Wednesday will be Brother Baba Akima with the Us Lifting Us organization. They had their conference this past weekend. We'll talk about that and what's going to happen in the future with Us Lifting Us, you know. So that's going to be very important. And then on Friday, Brother Mickey Dean of the National Black United Front, Kansas City chapter, one of the strongest chapters we have. But he was also the international chair and dealt with a lot of subjects internationally as it related to African people. And we'll talk about the new scramble for Africa. So So we got a couple of people on hold. I'll take 602. Good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Oshie. Good afternoon, brother. You know, it was in the Congo that they found that mountain of coal. Yeah, it was.
Okay.
It was in a village in the Congo. Yeah. You know, Gavi had a saying. He said, give the black people wealth, it will give them power. And I have a part out of the Bible I read that say, out of my Bible, black Bible, it says, seek ye first financial independence, economic independence, and all else shall be added unto you. See? Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is, we are not even organized to take advantage of that opportunity there with those people in Africa that found that mountain of gold.
Yeah.
Because we should be flying our people over there to buy it.
Yeah.
You see, because what's happening is that you have other ethnic groups over there giving those people little bit of nothing
right.
for those resources. I'm quite sure of that.
Yeah.
See, I am quite sure they have probably Chinese over there probably giving them peanuts for that wealth. You see, we should be organized to take advantage of that situation, but we are not. So we have to get that on the, get on the good foot.
You see, the problem, of course, is that the vast majority of our people who are in that kind of position have been trained and educated in this system. And as a consequence, there's a feeling of allegiance or alliance to this system. And we're afraid to do anything outside of it, you know, because we want favor with it. We want what they have to offer. We want the suburban lifestyle, the nice car, the all the other material things, you see. So we too, as the saying goes, we too sing America. And as a consequence, it's to the detriment of us as a people collectively, globally, you know, because the most technologically advanced Africans on this planet reside right here. Right here.
Yes, it's true. And you know, the thing is, you know, even with as the that little documentary appeared there right before, you know, with our paper money.
Right.
See?
Right.
But the paper money, that fiat money soon is going to lose value.
Yeah.
See, pretty soon, because they're pumping so much money into the economy that inflation is going to hit.
Oh, it has to. It's logical. Right.
Yes. Yeah. So the value of that dollar is, you know, is going to decrease. You know, the purchasing power of your paper money here is going to decrease. So it would be more intelligent to go take that money and go invest it in some hard assets in Africa, some gold, some diamond, some platinum, some you know. Invest it in hard assets because over time, this, you know, but we have, you know, as I said, we have no friends outside of the race and very few within because we have people, we have Arabs fighting us in Mozambique, we have Boko Haram fighting in Nigeria, we have, the, you know, and these people, what their intention is to do is to prevent the African from, if you want to trade, you're going to have to go through somebody. That is the whole intent of the Arab, you know, is not only these Europeans, this Arab working against
them. Oh, no doubt.
Because,
they
want us to pay a tribute if we're buying or selling anything in Africa. We have to go through them. That's why you see them trying to destabilize certain places in Africa because that is their intent. They are not our friends, you know, and a lot of black people, you know, I can't really understand why you embrace a religion of people that don't have demonstrated they don't care about you because they are the first people who even started the slave trade was these Arab people.
Mm-hmm.
They are not our friends, but they come and say, oh, let's all kneel down together and turn you behind five times to the east. You know, I can't really understand how any forward-thinking African who know their history could even embrace a religion like
yeah.
that. Because
yeah.
these people are not our friends.
Well, to me, any theology that has been imposed upon you by the threat of death should always be reevaluated and most definitely discarded. To me, if it's not African, and if it does not inspire African, if it does not give honor and reverence to our ancestors, if it does not talk about us historically, then, you know, it should be dismissed. You know, Christianity and Islam particularly look at Africans as primitive with no history. They both have taken Kemet out of Africa. It's in the Middle East, you see. And, of course, the Middle Easterners, they want to be like Caucasians, okay? They want to consider themselves just like Caucasians. And they want to function in that way. So the bottom line is that if we don't disassociate ourselves from this, and I know it's difficult, you know, and I know that the religious activity will start happening in the next few weeks, and we're going to talk about that. We need to talk about that. We need to talk about the truth of that, okay? We need to talk about the historical truth. The Exodus never happened. There were no Hebrews. There were no European Jews enslaved in Kemet. It did not happen. There was no resurrection. There was none of that. There is no history of that. And that's what we need to look at, the history. But yet, when I give you a myth, a fairy tale, and I impacted so hard on you, you believe that it is true. You believe that it is historical. And you operate from that. And that guides you. And what it really does is divide you. Because Christianity particularly is an individualistic religion. It does not promote what we as African people need. And that is the collective consciousness, the organizational consciousness that we need. Christian religion says, I'm blessed. I'm highly favored. You know? It's all about me and my personal relationship to my Savior. I'm blessed. While our community, while we go to hell. But your ass is blessed. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we have to get our economic house in order if we're going to get power, because we're going to need some wealth. We're going to need wealth to buy weapons, to buy bullets, to set up field hospitals. So we have to get our economic house in order. So, you know, necessity is going to drive us to that point. I think that, you know, and I see more and more talking, people say, look, we have to, you know, we have no choice, or else we're going to go down like the dinosaur went down in history.
Yeah.
They're going to say, you know, we were once some black folks, but they ain't here no more.
They were killed, and then they were breeded out.
Yeah,
because the Caucasian made it with us, and they made sure whatever offspring that happened, they will only mate with Caucasian, another Caucasian down the line, and so forth. They're going to breed us out because their numbers are dwindling. They must do that for their genetic and basic survival, and yet we fall prey to it. It's a damn shame.
Yeah. Okay. And just to finish, you know, Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben touched on that, said, look, this thing is all allegory and mythology. It's not real. There is no, all these characters you find in the Bible is wrote about, there is no grave site for none of these people. You can't go anywhere and find a grave site for any one of these characters in the Bible. See, so it's all allegory and foolishness, as you said, brother. Anyway, keep on keeping on, Brother Worship. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Brother Marcus. You have a blessed day, dear brother. Continue to listen. Appreciate you. 470-470, good afternoon. 470, good afternoon. Okay, they just want to listen. That's cool, too.
Hello.
Yes. Let me get you back up here. All right. 470?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Baba Oshi.
Hey. What's up, Ken Wardo? How you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing good, man. I just wanted to, wanted to tell you I appreciate a show like this, man. You know, I listen to it, and sometimes when I miss it, I kind of get upset because, you know, we need platforms like this to uplift the people in our community during these times, man. So that's all I wanted to say, man.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Also, too, my good friend, Brother Kenwato Moore, is with Sun Goddess Sense. That's right, brothers and sisters, your one-stop natural shop. It's located 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, inside an international discount mall, booth 225. And, of course, you can call Sister Shelley or you can call Brother Kenwato. We have with us now at 404-434-7963. Brother Kenwato, what I want you to do is, because sometimes, man, you may not be able to get on to give me information of some of the items that, you know, I talked about the stuff for your beer and, of course, the scents, the incense, the candles. Yeah. You know, I know you have some clothing, too, there, but all the things that you guys carry there. And so then anybody who is in that area, if you're in the south side of Atlanta and Jonesboro Road, please, Forest Park area, Hapeville area? Yeah. Please stop in.
The Forest Park.
Yeah. Yeah. So please stop in.
I'm sorry, Bob.
No, I just want to say that, you know, I want to make sure that I can help you out by making sure that I tell the people what you have. And okay. So we'll work on that. And I appreciate your call, man.
Yes, sir, Baba Oshi. One love.
One love. Continue to listen. Yes, thank you. Yeah, man. Appreciate that, brother. It's a good brother, him and his lady, Sister Shelley Amonset. And beautiful, beautiful. You know, family, I tell you, even though I get on this radio program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and some say, well, you say some of the same thing. Yeah, you know why? Because I'm trying to positively reinforce what is necessary for us to think about, for us to come together on, for us to galvanize, for us to bring into existence a reality that is necessary for us in our very survival. It is. I mean, like I said, the so-called Easter celebration is upcoming, and we're going to talk about that. You know, I know that, and then, of course, Ramadan is coming up as well, right after that. And these celebrations are fine for the people who are Christian and who are Muslim. And I know our people are Christian and are Muslim. But to me, when you discuss the issues that are affecting African people, when you come to that table, you need to leave your Christianity at home or put it in your back pocket. You need to leave your Islam, put it in your back pocket. Because we don't suffer in this world because we're Christian, Muslims, Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah Witness, Black Hebrew Israelites, Omega Psi Phi, a.k.a. whatever. We don't suffer because any of those individual entities. We suffer collectively because we African. We suffer on the continent, just as Baba Marcus said about John Henry Clark. He said to us, he says, we have no friends. We have no friends because of the job that the European has done on us. Everywhere in the world, nobody wants to be melanated. Nobody wants to be dark-skinned. In many countries, you're not represented on television. In many countries that where we know dark-skinned people are, you're relegated in the lower class, the lowest rung on the economic ladder, the lowest rung in society. You're denigrated. You're demeaned. You're degraded. In many countries where there are dark-skinned people, when they talk about the beauty of the country, it ain't your face. I did a piece on Brazil, and I've talked about Brazil a number of times. I've been to Brazil. I've been to Rio. I would love to go to Salvador Bahia. I think if you would look at Brazil, and I think one of the places to definitely go would be Salvador Bahia, where the brothers and sisters who were captive have tried to maintain a sense of Africanness within that culture. You know, and they have done so. You know, but if you're in Rio, or probably in, what's the capital city? It escapes me now. You know, and then your position is going to be less than. You know, it's going to be less than. Because the bottom line is that those who are lightest or close to white, that's why there are some people who try hard with bleaching creams and other and any other method that they can to lighten their skin. That's, you know, when I did that piece on Brazil, there was some like soap operas, you know, like they had, they don't have them too much here. I think a couple are still hanging on. They've been around for decades, like, I don't know, you know, the General Hospital and so forth. Well, they have these programs too in Brazil. And these programs are not just in Brazil. They send them to Europe as well, especially to Portuguese speaking countries and even Spanish speaking countries. And what's interesting is that they don't have African leads. The dark-skinned people, just like what the European did with ancient Kemet when they took that imagery, you know. They put the imagery of those who are in control as looking Caucasian. I saw it again last night on a piece, you know. It showed a picture, some illustrations, and they talked about ancient Kemet, and they look Caucasian. Now, granted, there could be the confusion for some of us, because after the 30th dynasty was the rule of the Ptolemies, the rule of the Greeks for 300 years. And a lot of them looked, of course, Caucasian. They were Greek. But a lot of them began to look like us because they're the intermixing. Once again, the Kemetic people were melanated. They were black. They were melanated. And the intermixing, of course, because of genetics, African genes are dominant. Caucasians are recessive. And when you mix, you get dominant. You get dominant, recessive, you get dominant. Recessive, you get recessive. But of course, they're now experiencing problems of birthing, of having children. And so they had an illustration. If you're serving somebody, you're African, you're dark. Because what they constantly want to do is put into our minds that we ain't never been nothing but a servant. And nothing could be furthest from the truth. But that's what you see. That's what you see consistently. Anybody want to get in on this conversation? Dial 215-490-9832. Got a few more minutes. 215-490-9832. And of course, I got a number of people who are hold. You hit star twice. Hit star twice and join the conversation. You know, that's why it's important that we begin to work towards this unification. Because our future is not assured. It is tenuous at best. When you have a people who are running the world, who can't stand us, who have proven to be an enemy to us, but yet they're running the world. We just mentioned in that video, audio piece I just presented right at the break that I played, and I will continue to play that. And I want to thank Mama Nabantu for that. But they tell you, you know, the fact that we have no friends and the fact that our situation is tenuous. And if we don't do something, if we don't begin to look at the situation for what it is and begin to make the necessary changes, it's over. 646, good afternoon.
Odios, what's happening, man? How was your weekend?
Everything was fine, Jay. Well, I tell you, it was, you know, taking my grandson to his basketball tournament. They wound up 2-2, which was good. They're a relatively very young team. But I'll say this. I mean, this is one of those serious basketball tournaments, you know, where they put teams together across the country. And so they say it's 7th grade. But, man, some of these cats, look, they looked old. And their bodies were like, man. And our team was, they're 7th grade. Our team was 13 years old. My grandson's 13 years old, you know. And some of these cats look, and I think, too, they go by grade. And what they should do, go by grade and age. And, in fact, if you're 14 or 15 in the 7th grade because you know, were held back for whatever reason, then you should be able to play with the age, you know, with like the eighth grade, even though you're not in 7th. You know what I'm saying? Even though you're not in 8th. But still, when you play 7th graders, you should be in 7th grade and 13 years old. You shouldn't be in 7th grade 15 years old. Because physically, that's a huge difference. And that showed in the two games that we lost. Even in the game, one of the games that we won, just that the fact that we're a tough team. You know, and we're going to be tough a number of years from now as these guys learn to play with one another and begin to mature with one another. You know, they're going to be tough. But, man.
That's a competitive situation.
Yeah, very.
Because,
very.
You know, you got a lot of parents who got that dream of their kids becoming NBA players.
Sure.
And, what you call it? You know, it's funny. I had, well, where I grew up at one time, we had the number one basketball player in the country. And funny is, his son is on the verge of becoming an NBA player. I mean, back in the day, when I was growing up, the big magazine was Street and Smith.
Right, yes.
And he was the number one player on Street and Smith.
What was his name?
Gary Springer.
Gary Springer, okay.
Yeah, he was on, matter of fact, the number one high school team also at that time, Benjamin Franklin High School. And he went on to Iona, but what happened was his knees went bad on him. Matter of fact, he had a running mate, Steve Burke. Steve Burke played in the NBA for a hot minute, but then he went overseas and made a career for himself. But Gary couldn't do that. Gary had, I think he had other kids too. I think one of his kids followed in his footsteps to Iona. I think he plays overseas now, if I'm not mistaken. But he has a son now, Jayden Springer, that's on Tennessee. And
okay, on the Volunteers. Well, they're in the tournament.
On the Tennessee Vols.
Yeah, okay.
And they projected him to be a first-round NBA pick.
Okay.
But I think he should do one more year because he needs to refine his game a little bit. But I was reading something interesting about that whole basketball thing. They had this guard back in, I would say, the late 90s. I think it was 90s or the early 2000s, named Omar Cook.
Yeah, I remember Omar Cook.
He was like the number, he was like, matter of fact, he led St. John's in the NCAA in assists. And after his freshman year, he went pro and he never stuck. But you know what the beautiful thing is about that is he went overseas and he's still playing basketball today.
Sure. It's just 20-year
career.
Yeah. It's just like Stephon Marbury. They built a statue of Stephon Marbury in China.
Yeah, in China. but Steph was a great player.
Yeah.
In the NBA. Omar, he never played in the NBA. Right. But the beautiful thing is, he's a Maseratian citizen. He comes back to New York like once a year during the summer. And he's made a nice life for himself.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Well,
to be able to do it for 20 years and... I mean, they wrote the article that I saw. I mean, he has a 6-to-1 turnover rate at 40 years old. So, I mean, he probably will be able to play as long as he physically can possibly play. And, I mean, he's making great money. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And he has a certain degree of stability.
The thing on that is that if you are a good player, you should make sure that you utilize your talents and that your talents aren't used against you, that you're used up. I often think about the story of the brother from, he went to Creighton. He went to Creighton in Omaha, and he played all 4 years. And then once he was used up, they kicked him to the curb. And he went to Marva Collins School in Chicago.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. He's sitting in them chairs, and I'm all the students, his big 6'8" ass, sitting in that chair just getting his assignment done. He's an educator today. He's an educator.
Right.
You know. But that's the point, and that's why next week I'll talk about the NC2A, because the tournament starts next week. You know,
selection. I know you got another one.
I do.
It's your yearly nut to be, you know, exhumed. You know,
well, I tell you, because, you know, it is the height of usury. It is the height of it. And when one says it's like enslavement, it's damn near just, because here you have all these brothers who don't get nothing. And you have all these damn coaches and institutions who are making millions and billions. I hate the NC2A with a passion because of its usury mechanisms, where kids, young people, can't get a damn thing while they get everything. And the universities...
They feel room and board, and education is significant enough payment. What's dangerous to me is, this is what I feel about it, what's dangerous to me is this new league that they're putting together to, you know, attract high school players with $100,000 a year, college fund if they don't make the NBA and this and that. To me, that's kind of dangerous, man.
To me, I love it, because one thing is that if you have a talent, you should be able to exploit your talent. Outside should not be able to exploit you for your talent. Okay? And that is what's been
being exploited also, though.
But see that, hold on, Jay. That's what has been happening for decades, is the NC2A has been exploiting the talent of these people, and they've made big money. Yes, many of them have gone on to pro careers, having had the opportunity to show their talents at these colleges and universities. But believe me, the coaches, I mean, when you look at the money that these people have made, the coaches particularly, you know, Calipari. One thing I got to give Calipari some credit for. Calipari told he's now at Kentucky. He was at, remember when he was at UMass and John Chaney was going to kick his ass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
Never forget that. But anyway, Calipari, he told the parents of these kids, he said, listen, I can say to you about the great facility of the University of Kentucky has and all this, that, and the other great curriculum, but I'm going to say it to you this way. I'm going to help your son get drafted, because if your son gets drafted by the NBA, your son will get paid right away. And if your son stays 1 year, 2 to 3, 4, that's fine. Whatever your son decides that he wants to do, you know, we'll support that and help him get drafted. That's what we're going to, that's what our program is about. So I give him credit for that, because that's the reality. That is the reality. That's what all of them do. They could give less than a rat's ass if these young people get any kind of education. That's why I've advocated that they should get a stipend. They should get paid. They should play. And when their playing time is up, whether that is a year or two or whatever, then because of what they did for the university, they should get an education. In fact, an advanced degree education for free because of what they were able to give to the university whenever that time was up. Say, for instance, they did play. Now they're not playing, and now, you know, they've been out of school 10 years or so. But I want this education now. Now you can get it. Now you can get it. You see?
Yeah, well, I think some schools have programs like that. It depends on, honestly, what your relationship was with the school that will determine if they do that. But I know some schools don't, maybe some schools doesn't. But, I mean, I find it to all be a usury. Anyway, you know, in those situations, like you said, the NCAA, they just trying to use you for a profit. I mean, it shows in a sense this whole season how the profits are,
but
and see, what they assume it to be.
But look at Jay. You look at the two major sports in college athletics, football and basketball. Then you look at the power conferences, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, and so forth. These big power conferences who make billions of dollars, who have arenas that are 15,000, 20,000 people seat arenas, you know, who have all the highest tech stuff on their campuses and so forth. The coaches is making millions. The coach, not only is he making millions from the university, the coach, particularly at a public school, is more than likely the highest paid person in that state. The football and the basketball coach, if they have a Division I program and in a Power 5 conference, they are the highest paid person in that state. But not only that, they have other revenue streams. They have a TV program, a radio program. They got endorsements. One of the athletic companies, Nike, Adidas, Reebok, whoever else, they contract with the coach, and every one of those players must wear that. They must wear that uniform or that logo, you know. So I'm saying, you know, with all of this madness, March Madness. In fact, I like this Bill Maher quote. It says, "March Madness is a stirring reminder of what America was founded on, the free labor of unpaid African people."
That's what it is.
That's what it is. Because these young men and young women, you know, but most often it's the young men, because that's where the big money is made. That's where all these coaches who are making millions. I remember Al McGuire at Marquette. I'm from Milwaukee. And Al McGuire had gotten Dean Memminger from New York. And some of a couple of his players, and in a report he said, you know, look at that paved driveway. See that paved driveway? Dean Memminger put that there. He wasn't advocating for them to get paid, but he was recognizing the worth of those men who play in that sport and play for that school, because they're so good, they elevate them and they to a to a prominence, and people want to come, not just the people in school at that university, but the people of the citizens of that city or that state, whatever. They laying down money to watch these players. Yeah. You see? And so to me, that I think that it's going to come to that. They just signed this thing recently saying that they have an opportunity to make some money off their likeness. Not every player can do that. And that's going to be very few. That's really nothing. What they propose, that's nothing. What needs to be proposed is that they develop a stipend system. They develop classes for money management. They develop the ways that these people, I mean, when a coach comes to the hood and sits down in that front room or at that kitchen table, whatever it is, and talk about their son coming to this school and what it's going to mean for him academically, it's bull. Because what it's going to mean is going to be some serious money.
It depends on what type of student the kid is.
Well, Jay, I understand that. Jay, I understand that. But let's be real. Just like some of the top – Richard Sherman, who went to Stanford. Richard Sherman says, listen, this is bull. It took a lot out of me to get my studies in and so forth. The average athlete that is employed by these Power Five conferences in football and basketball specifically, they train all the time. School is very secondary. It is about the preparing the athlete to put the best team out there. Because Alabama does not pay Nick Saban $11 million a year. $11 million a year. Alabama. And he has go ahead,
but
Jay.
There's a flip side to it also, Ochi. If you're a good student, you could benefit from that experience, because I know cats that have been able to graduate college in 3 years because they were good students.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, listen.
So it's a flip side to it. It's
That's a small flip, Jay.
It's a game.
Jay, that's a small flip because that's a small amount of people that have been able to do that. The majority of people are almost like what we said when we first started this conversation about the brother who went to Creighton University in Omaha and wound up using 4 years and not having any knowledge of what's happening in college, could not, you know, even read. So, I mean, right. That was just like Dexter Manley. Dexter Manley played for the Washington team many years ago in their Super Bowl time. He's the same thing in his situation. So I'm saying is that, yes, there are some very strong academic young men who athletically are very good, academically are very good. They could write their own ticket to any place or to get a scholarship that they would desire. But the reality is there are many of them who are used. They are used. And once their eligibility is over, they're kicked to the curb.
I say it like this, man. Hopefully the ancestors will bless you and your grandson to get to that position to where as one of those crackers that comes sit at your table and what you do is record it. Because I would love to hear the exchange between you and one of those crackers, you telling them what's going to happen. And it may happen with Bobby Knight and Isaiah Thomas, brother. When I heard that story, I said, Lord, have mercy. You know, I must say this about Isaiah Thomas. Everybody has, there's people that have issues with Isaiah. Isaiah's a real brother, man.
Yes, he is. I love Isaiah Thomas.
He's
Chicago.
He has indirectly done more for people than people can imagine. I remember I was talking with someone about Isaiah, and they were talking about, Isaiah will tell you in a minute, man, the hell with the agent. Get you a lawyer.
Yeah.
Isaiah, the way that Isaiah counsels these young men, you know, most men that's been around Isaiah, from what I understand, are very successful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's what I
McGrady's yeah. everybody. Because he's not only schooling you, he's
well, using the same himself thing.
As an example. Yeah. I didn't even know that on the East Coast he was the person responsible for all of the pre-prepared popcorn that would be in the movie theaters.
Huh? Really? Well, anyway, I gotta go.
I didn't know that he had a company that all through the East Coast, his company would supply the pre-packaged popcorn that you would get at the movie theater. That blew me away.
Right.
I don't know if he's still involved now.
Well, let me just say this. I got to go. Yeah, I got to go. But I agree with you. I love Isaiah Thomas. Hotep J, you have a great day. I hope you'll be back with us on Wednesday, okay? Peace, brother.
You got a guest Wednesday?
Yeah, I got a guest. I got Brother Baba Akima of Us Lifting Us, Ulu. They had their conference this past weekend. We're going to talk about...
How did things go with the Boogie Woogie Jones? I had missed it.
Yeah, it was good. It was real good. Yeah.
Is it on archives? Because I'll definitely try and listen to it.
We don't have it on yet, but it'll be on real quick. So I'll get my brother Quake Cool, and we'll get it on real quick. With the
All right, cool. I got to check out Boogie Woogie Jones. Okay. Talk to you later, Enjoy it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jay. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and sure in hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Peace, family.